industry pulls in billions of dollars each year as health-conscious Americans look for ways to improve their well-being. However, Dr. Mikhail Varsky, also known as Dr. Mike, tells Fox Business, you have to be careful with these supplements, as sometimes you don't really know what you're getting.
We found 86% of people are taking supplements, and only about a quarter of those people actually need to. People are wasting their money, and they're being targeted by marketers who are preying on their insecurities to get them a better sex drive, more muscle, faster weight loss. None of these things are proven, at times even harmful. Maria, get this, 23,000 ER visits last year because...
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Well, good afternoon. Interested in the weather? I guess most of us should be. For football fans, I guess we don't mind staying in, watching television, watching the championship games this weekend. But let me tell you, if you have to be outside, be careful. Tonight, only partly cloudy, so nothing to worry about. However, tomorrow, Saturday, snow, mainly after 2 p.m., about a 20%, which is a slight chance of snow, and then about a 90% chance of snow and sleet. Probably, however, in the afternoon, the chance of precipitation is 90%. However, accumulation should be less than an inch. Also could be rain, depending on just where that temperature is, because we're expecting a high of about 33 degrees, so it could be rain rather than snow or sleet. However, by tomorrow night, there's expectation of snow before midnight, and then snow and sleet between midnight and 1 a.m., and then rain after 1 a.m. So the snow prediction, 100%, that's the forecast. Could be heavy at times. And winds, some gusts possibly. And as they're predicting, the chance of precipitation is 100%. So it's the question is whether it's snow, sleet, whether it'll accumulate. Depending on where you are, there is a possible accumulation of 3 to 7 inches. So we can, depending, I'd rather have the snow if it's dry rather than snow and sleet. Certainly I would personally rather have 7 inches of snow rather than 3 inches of a combined freezing snow and sleet. So what's happening then on Sunday, again, 100% chance of wintry mix and then snow, freezing rain and sleet before 10 a.m., then the prediction is snow, freezing rain, and sleet again for another hour, and then snow after 11 a.m., high about 31 degrees. So, again, depending, you know, although the chance of precipitation is 100%, the question is what? But there could be icy, black ice, because the ice accumulation of possibly... you know, less than 1/100th of an inch, but new snow and sleet accumulation. However, again, that's going to be less than half an inch. So, you know, it's not the amount of snow, it's whether or not we're going to have, you know, the cold and the freezing and, you know, what's going to happen when it gets on the ground. So by Sunday night, there is a chance of snow, and then partly cloudy with a low around 4 degrees. So that's going to be probably colder than almost any other time so far this winter. That's really, 4 degrees is cold. And then by Sunday, we are supposed to have a sunny day. By Monday, it's supposed to be sunny for the holiday if you're off from work. Very, very sunny, but very cold. 15 degrees is predicted the high. And again, by Monday night, it's mostly clear, but it's about a 6, it might be down to 6 degrees. So that's going to be very cold, and that's the weather. So my sports guy and co-host, Bill, has just walked in. Unfortunately, our third co-host, John, is still under the weather, recovering from surgery, and hopefully he may be back next week, because I know I cannot be here next week. So if not, we will have Bill sitting here all by himself, and actually he's sitting here looking like he's hoping it's spring, because he has, although a long sleeve shirt on, it's light. He doesn't have a heavy flannel shirt to, what we probably will be thinking about wearing over the weekend if we venture outside. So, Bill, we're talking, of course, about the championship weekend. And how would you like to start? Because we have to talk football. I may let you have a few minutes to talk some other sport. But, I mean, come on. Even though your Eagles are out of it, this is possibly the best football of the season from a standpoint of we have four excellent teams, right?
Well, that's absolutely true, Pat. You know, we've had a number of people frustrated over the Eagles and their final drive. As everybody knows, the Eagles had difficulty with in the first couple of quarters with the New England, after the first quarter with the New Orleans Saints, and the drive went a long, very strong drive. And we've had the problem of the Eagles' offense sputtering. You know, the problem with Philadelphia is the running game simply has not been there all year. They played, I thought, an amazing first quarter, and I said to myself, holy smokes.
Oh, everybody.
We just might be going to Los Angeles to finish this up, and we knew we can beat the Rams.
I mean, that first play of the game was pretty amazing.
Wasn't it? Yeah. But what really broke
my
heart.
Because the Saints had the game, had the ball first. And, you know, with that early turnover, not even talk about last week. We can talk about this week. Other than, and I never forget, Jeffrey's first name?
Alshon Jeffrey.
Alshon. That had to be just devastating when he missed that catch, because that sealed the game.
That would have put the ball on the 19, the New Orleans 19, with the two-minute warning coming up. And everybody thought the Eagles were going to get a touchdown out of that drive, beat the Saints. And after having a rough time of it and just not being able to make all the defensive plays they would have liked to have made and not being able to shut down New Orleans' run. Shows what a great quarterback Drew Brees is, excellent play calling, and the Eagle defense bent, but it finally broke. And Drew Brees is an excellent quarterback. They've got some excellent receivers in New Orleans. I didn't realize that Darryl Sproles had come to the Eagles from New Orleans and had a very good career there. But Sproles is now 33 or 34, and he's on the back nine of an excellent career as a running back. The other thing I was surprised about Sproles is, despite his lack of size, he's only 5'8 and a half, he manages to find holes between these big fleshy mountains of defenders.
Well, there are a couple of those. There are a couple guys who are playing at about 5'6", so you're absolutely right. I think that the disappointment, one of the disappointments is, remember that one catch that Jeffers made. I mean, you know, he obviously was a basketball player. He obviously can go up and get the ball. And when he comes down with it, he usually can put some yards after he catches the ball. So that was really tough. But let's talk a little bit about how do you think the Saints are going to do against the Rams?
Well, it's very clear to me that it's going to be the better of the two games, although I think the best four teams in football are playing. I think that the Saints have their work cut out for them with L.A., but I think they're going to win. And my prediction is it's going to be a 24-21 game.
You know what? I think a lot is going to depend a couple things. One, obviously, the running game is always important. But I think that the teams who can come up with something new, I like to call it the razzle-dazzle effect. But one of the things that's so apparent to me is when the defense lines up and they can pretty much predict what the offense is going to do, they can nail them. But every once in a while, and of course we'll see it, not every once in a while, but we'll see it when they recognize that their opponents are not going to do what they think, then they realign. But I would like to see, and I think that whoever can come up with something new, in other words, what they have to do is really try something that's unexpected. Because that, with you have good defenses on each team. And so I think that the offense has to come up with something, I don't even know what they call some of these things when they, throw it back and forth and they throw a lateral and then, throw it again. And, sometimes these things don't work.
Well, remember the Philadelphia special in the Super Bowl, where Foles handed the ball off to a running back. Foles faked like he had the ball and was going to run around the end. And a couple of the Patriots bit on it and then said, nah, somebody still has the ball. And then they threw a pass to Foles while he was standing in the end zone, and touchdown Eagles win the Super Bowl. Right at the end. So, the Philly special is the kind of thing I think we might just see somebody else try to imitate this weekend, if your theory is correct, Pat.
Well, but I think otherwise, first of all of the defenses on all of these teams are good. They read, they usually or very often can read what's happening. But let me ask you one other thing. Who do you think, which quarterback do you think is most vulnerable to the blitz?
I think the quarterback most vulnerable to the blitz, I hate to say this, is Drew Brees, because a little older, he's 40, just like Tom Brady is, I think, 40 or 41. But despite the fact that he's a smart, very careful quarterback, it gets rid of the ball fast. I think he's more vulnerable because the New Orleans offensive line had real trouble against the Eagles' defense. And it was only when the ball was run a few times that the Eagles backed off a little bit and Brees was able to complete some of his longer passes. So the fact also that I thought was very interesting was that the Eagles secondary was banged up. They have some good players, but they weren't the first string like they had in the Super Bowl. So you have people that Brees knew that if he could get the ball there, it would get caught, and not by somebody in green and white. So you have the I think Brees is the most vulnerable. The difficulty that I have with New England is good O-line. It's real tough to bet against Tom Brady coming through one more time. I don't know, because I haven't followed the Rams enough to see how they're doing. Now, their quarterback, I think, is Jeff Goff, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Goff got sacked a number of times by the Eagles. There was one where he literally bounced off the ground and got hit again and landed and got the wind knocked out of him. And it was, I think, on the Rams' 5 or 10-yard line. And it put them in a fourth and about 15 situation. And they had to kick, but you could see him on the sidelines, and there was something that just did not look right about him. But I thought that Goff got better protection towards the end of that game. That's the one Rams game I watch. I did not spend a lot of time watching the Rams-Dallas game because I just wasn't really that keen. I was really just totally focused on the Eagles and Saints, because the Eagles are a team that I follow passionately. The difficulty that I see is I think the Chiefs, let's flip around a little bit. I think the Chiefs can beat the Patriots.
Oh, I definitely do. And, of course, that may be two things. One, I would bet on any team that's playing against the Patriots, number one. But there, the one factor, and I honestly don't think the weather, I don't see how that's going to benefit either team. In other words, they're supposed to have bad weather out in Kansas City, but I almost think that's a so what. However, what I do think can be a real factor, and unlike other people, I think that the crowd noise is a factor with the running game. In other words, I think it can be play much more havoc with the running game. But the crowd noise, both New Orleans and Kansas City, I think have an advantage. Maybe can't measure that advantage, but they do have an advantage because they're playing at home. And they have outstanding fans both places. And, of course, I would love to see Andy Reid. I like Andy. I've always liked Andy. I don't think he was treated well in Philadelphia. And I like what he's done out in Kansas City. And, of course, I think unless he gets hurt, Pat Mahomes is going to be one of the young quarterbacks that we're really going to see progress. And, you know, he's holding his own.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. Reed and the Chiefs, since he's been the head coach of the Chiefs, have played Belichick and his Patriots 4 times, and they're 2-2.
Right.
So the first one was the Chiefs' 41-14 Monday night win over the Pats in September of 2014. Then you had the January 2016 game where the Pats won 27-20 because the Chiefs' offense just took way too long to score. Then Alexis Smith and Kareem Hunt knocked off the Super Bowl champion Patriots in the 2017 season opener that said that Kansas City was now for real on the offense. Then in Week 6, a game in a season that there was a Week 6 game, and this one, that's only one punt, 30 combined fourth quarter points, and a late second Stephen Gostkowski field goal to win at 43-40 for New England. So it's Kansas City's turn, because this is going seesawing back and forth. And the fact that Kansas City's playing at home at Arrowhead Stadium and the weather's not going to be all that bad anymore. It's now going to be about 29 and a little windy.
Really? It's not going to be snowing?
Yeah. Well, maybe, but then again, maybe not. So the Pats haven't won in Kansas City since 2004 when Corey Dillon rushed for 2 touchdowns. So,
But I still think the one thing that, you know, I hate to say it, but Brady pulls out the tough games. Now, were any of those, the games you're talking about, were any of them playoff games?
Some were. Remember, let me take a look at my note here. There was the January 2016 playoff game, but the Pats won 27-20 because the Chiefs just couldn't get it done. But that was
yeah, but that was the playoff.
Game.
That's the only one.
So can you say that the Patriots crank it up in the playoffs? Maybe so.
But I think they do. I think that when Brady has these, you know, first of all, it looks like he's going to win every game. But the games that he doesn't win or they don't win, you know, I mean, their role and their season, I mean, look, they've been involved in the playoffs, what, 8 seasons out of 9? I mean, that's the only team that even comes close to that record, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. You know, it's interesting. Here's what I'm looking for. You know, the Patriots use a lot of play-action passing, and the Chiefs are very good at read, anticipate, and defend. So it's going to see. We're going to have to see whether, you know, they're using the base or the three wide receiver personnel, whether the Pates are going to pull the guards to influence the second level linebackers to move in, because that's going to open space for Julius Edelman and Ron Gronkowski to win on crossing routes. So, you know, as I always say, the thing I like most about football is the speed and the deception.
Well, because, I love the deception. I mean, I really, and again, some quarterbacks are better handing off than others.
Yeah.
I mean, they really are. And talking about handing off, why don't we hand off to play some of the spots, and then we'll be back.
Hey, did we get new spots yet?
We actually have.
A new spot sheet for our advertisers.
Played
about time.
This one and thinking, oh, no, here we go, another expo. And it wasn't. It was actually new. Of course, we don't have a sheet from today, but that, I understand, will be changed.
Well,
so let's be back in a minute.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, RabCoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Hey, we're back with the sports guys, and hi, John, if you're out there listening to us, I know you're going to have an excuse to watch the games this weekend, and I suppose we all have an excuse if we don't have to, shovel snow, and good reason not to shovel snow, and to wait, although we can't wait till it melts, because on Monday, even though it's going to be sunny,
It's not going to melt.
It's going to be 15 degrees. So guess what, folks?
Guess what? 15 degrees and the hockey game's on.
Right.
That's a line in a Jimmy Buffett song called Boat Drinks. Right after he shoots four holes in his freezer, he wants to be down in the Caribbean drinking something strong, sweet, and with a little umbrella in it. But it's going to be that kind of weekend for maybe not boat drinks, but I'm thinking rum. I'm thinking put your feet by the fire, turn on the TV, watch, absorb as much football as you can possibly get.
Well, you know what I'm thinking.
Plus the Flyers are in Montreal.
You know what I'm thinking? This is the weekend to be a Saints fan. Because if you've never watched a game in New Orleans, it's Lambeau's terrific. You have to go to Lambeau sometime if you're a sports fan. But New Orleans is the polar opposite of Green Bay. In Green Bay, there is nothing to do except go to the football game and see the sports complex and, take the tour and go to the Green Bay Hall of Fame, Packer Hall of Fame, which is, of course, at the stadium. And then there are a few bars around there. Well, New Orleans... And, Bill, I don't think you've been to the stadium in New Orleans, have you?
I've never set foot in New Orleans.
Well, guess what?
I've never set foot in Louisiana, so hit me with your best shot.
Best shot. And it's very different, by the way, when it's a football weekend, or I was down there for a Super Bowl weekend, and it's very different than Mardi Gras. I've been there for Mardi Gras, too. The crowd is totally different. But the one thing that's the same is you're down on Bourbon Street, and all of a sudden, before the game is going to start, everybody walks, and I mean walks, to the stadium. It's that close. You finish the game, and everybody goes back to Bourbon Street to party. And you know what? It's sometimes hard to determine who are the fans of the winning team and who are the fans of the losing team, because unless they have some paraphernalia on, everybody's partying. I mean, it is just an incredible city.
Well, Pat, I've always thought that alcohol and football were as bad as plutonium and uranium when it comes to partying. You have an explosive mix, and you can really have a good time. And somebody once said to me, and he was obviously a Phillies fan, a Philadelphia fan, you know how good a time you had by the length of the charge sheet the police have handed you the next day before you get in front of the judge. Well, that doesn't say much for a lot of our Philadelphia fans, but, I've been to Philadelphia Eagle games, and I've actually seen the cops haul people off, not for running on the field, but for doing all kinds of stupid stuff.
But you can have fun in New Orleans with everybody else drinking and just – because there's so much music, there's so many people. It's just, you know, it's just a very, in my view, a very fun place. And the football crowd, as I said, is very different than the Mardi Gras crowd. And I knew, in fact, when we went down to the Super Bowl, believe it or not, that was the year that the Packers played the Patriots. But there were a lot of fans from Wisconsin that went down to New Orleans a few days before, didn't have tickets, couldn't get tickets, and so they flew back to Green Bay day of the game so they could, or the day before the game, so they could watch the game. And if I recall, they opened Lambeau for people to come in and watch that game. I may be wrong, but I don't think so, because I think there were people who were at least planning on going back to Green Bay to watch the game at Lambeau, and if not Lambeau, one of the many bars. And you've been to Green Bay, so you certainly know there's no lack of bars in Wisconsin, or certainly no lack of bars in Green Bay, right around the stadium.
And certainly no lack of alcohol in Green Bay. And I have to tell you, Green Bay Packer fans are some of the hardiest fans I've ever seen. I strolled up to beautiful Lambeau Field at 8 a.m. one morning after a comfortable evening in Appleton, after a long flight from Newark. And here it is, 8 in the morning, and some very hardy Green Bay fans are out in front of their grills behind their RVs or their station wagons or trucks. And, you know, they were most of them already legless drunk by that time. They say that the best antifreeze is the kind you buy at the liquor store, and these guys were not kidding. And, you know, I've never had a bratwurst at 8 in the morning. It was good.
It certainly is. But, you know, the tailgaters, it is true. Games start out there at noon, and they start tailgating at 8 in the morning. And, frankly, you can't get in there. It's a fairly small parking lot now where you can tailgate. And so, actually, I don't know if they've changed it. It used to be you just had to get there. I don't know now if you have to have some kind of a pass to get into tailgate. But it's not only that. As you know, literally right next to the stadium, there are lots of little houses. And people buy those houses basically so they can have parties. And many people park. They park cars all over their lawns. They have parties there. They, you know, it's just a very different place. I don't know. You know, you go to most stadiums, and I don't know if there's other stadiums. I'm trying to think of the other stadiums that are really in residential areas.
You know, I'm not sure about that because I haven't been that many places. Usually the stadiums are either out in a suburb or they're downtown because of a transportation hub like the Philadelphia Lincoln Financial Field is. But you know what the more interesting thing about Green Bay was? The passion that even people you would not expect to be football fans have. We, on the way in to the Packer Hall of Fame, there was a woman who must have been in her 80s, dressed like for the winter, and she had white hair, and she had a little white, she had a green, gold, and white Green Bay Packers stocking hat pulled over her ears, and she and her family, and there must have been about 16 of them, were all standing around a table admiring the cake that she made, and she had made a sheet cake that looked like Lambeau Field, and she had, and there were little Chicago Bears on one side that she had made out of something. Maybe it was marzipan, maybe it were a little plastic Chicago Bears. And then there were Green Bay Packers, and they were a little bigger. And then they had one Green Bay Packer with a rather large defensive lineman's number. And that Green Bay Packer was a child's toy, but it was a child's toy of the Amazing Hulk. And the Amazing Hulk had somehow managed to blitzed the entire Bears line and had his feet firmly planted on the little Chicago Bears quarterback, driving the guy's, the little doll quarterback's face into the frozen turf of Lambeau sheet cake.
Well, you know, talking about the teams that are playing this week, my sense is that the Kansas City fans are more like the Lambeau fans than any of the other places.
There's no doubt about that, because if you've been to Kansas City.
And I have.
It's really more of a college sports town. The Royals are appreciated, but they haven't been good since the George Brett era. So, you know, baseball's fun and people go when they enjoy the games. But Arrowhead Stadium and their Chiefs, especially when the Chiefs are playing well. And remember, the Chiefs were not a good team until Andy Reid got there. They were among the bottom feeders of the AFC Central. Once Andy Reid got there, they drastically improved. And with an excellent run quarterback in Mahonis, some great defensive players, I think the Chiefs are peaking where they're primed to beat the Patriots. Whether they can or not, we'll have to watch on Sunday and find out. But in Kansas City, there's not a ton to do if you're passionate about sports. Their NHL team escaped. They went first to Denver and then to New Jersey. Remember the Kansas City Scouts, who became the Colorado Rockies, who became your New Jersey Devils. And then they put the Avalanche in there, but the Avalanche escaped from Quebec, where they were the Quebec Nordiques. So, enough hockey history. Let's go back to what we're really talking about, the important stuff, football.
Well, and I think
we have a very interesting game coming up for this AFC Championship.
Oh, I
agree. I think that's going to be the more interesting game. I think the Saints are going to really dominate the Rams. I just think Goff is a guy who needs more experience. And I think the Saints, after narrowly escaping the claws of the Philadelphia Eagles and stopping what I swore was going to be the winning drive.
A lot of other people.
I said, here we go. Here we go. Get ready. Here it comes. And, of course, Alshon Jeffries makes a nice jump. The ball tips off his fingers and is intercepted, and he is crushed. I must tell you what I'm going to have to tell a cardiologist someday. I had genuine pain on the left side of my chest.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, my grandson Tommy is diehard. Diehard Eagles fan. He's learned that and he learned from us, and I'm trying to remember what playoff game that was, but we were sitting watching a playoff game with a daughter and the grandkids, and it was like 2 minutes to go, and Tommy was saying, oh, the Packers are going to win, and Dave, my husband, said, you can't count on it, you can't count on anything. And they were all saying to him, oh, you're such a pessimist. And, of course, the Packers lost. So Tommy knows not to, think anything's in the bag until it actually is won. But I've seen Jeffers. I don't watch the Eagles that often. But, I mean, he had made at least one tremendous catch. I think it was in that playoff game, if I recall. It might have been the prior one.
He made a number of excellent catches.
I mean,
and he made some good catches against the Bears.
And he's tall. And
he's
a basketball player.
From high school. And so is Foles. These are both real guys who are like 6'5 or 6'6. And Alshon Jeffries has a big talent. He's a talented guy, good hands. This was a fluke. But I think he can jump 3-4 feet.
Oh, at least that much. But let's talk about one other thing. Who's this young Heisman Trophy winner? I can't remember his name. Who's just, he's now, they had, what's the day that they have to say that they're going to try to go into the NFL.
You know, I don't follow that. I think they have to opt out of college football.
Yeah, they opt in or something.
Or and opt into the
I
NFL
think it,
draft.
I think it might be tomorrow.
Available to be drafted.
And but he's it was very interesting because he's going to be in a unique position because apparently, and I think it's the Kansas City A's, really want him to play baseball. He plays both baseball, football, Heisman Trophy winner. And the question now is, where will he play? Because I don't know as much as, I don't know much about baseball anymore. But if he goes to play baseball and he's playing in, what, double A, triple A, they have a salary, a set salary for everyone, don't they?
Yeah, there are different bands for what they'll pay you in different levels of minor league ball, and the pay is per month, and it's only for a six-month season. Remember, some minor leagues have what's called a split season. They play to July, then there's a week off, and then they play from July to September.
But the point is here, you know, if he goes into the NFL draft and is drafted a certainly a high draft, which it sounds like he would be if he's a Heisman Trophy winner, the money he would get to play baseball, apparently they're trying to figure out some way to make some kind of an exception. But obviously if they make an exception for him, is his name Nathaniel something? In any event, I thought that was an interesting dilemma because he stands to make millions if he goes in to play football, and certainly if he goes in to play baseball, unless they find some loophole, he'd be making minimal. You know, they're paid pretty minimal wage, as I recall.
I think at the triple A level, I'm sorry, I think at the double A level, you make about $1,000 a week.
So, you know, unless this kid loves baseball. Is there any incentive for him to play baseball?
Here's the answer. You have to step back and say, is he a five-tool baseball player, a four-tool baseball player, or a three-tool baseball player, meaning arm, bat speed, running speed, his glove, and the intangible. Is the guy smart enough to devote himself to the position? Therefore, if you're not a five-tool kind of guy, you're not going to get a big signing bonus.
But can they even give a big-time bonus to start out?
Oh, you can get a signing bonus of whatever the team's willing to pay you. The problem is that that bonus is a one shot in baseball, whereas in football, if you're the Heisman Trophy winner, you're gonna make more money. First of all, your sign-on bonus is gonna be a lot more money. Plus, don't you have a better shot at playing in the big show, the NFL? Because there are no minor leagues in football. That's what
right.
We have colleges for. So you have a very interesting situation. Now, the average football player's career is, what, 4 or 5 years? The average baseball player's career is 9 or 10 years.
And yeah, is that from the time they get into the NFL, into the big leagues, or is that the time they start in minor league?
That's
ball.
The time they start in minor leagues. Usually by 30, a lot of these guys have said, I'm not getting into the big show as much as I love this. I have to go do something else.
Yeah, because it's very minimal pay.
Pardon?
It's really pretty minimal pay.
Yeah, unless you are from outside the U.S., where $1,000 a week is, you know, a lot of money.
Yeah, but you got to live here on that $1,000 a week.
Yeah, but remember something. The team pays for the living expenses. If you're a minor league ball player, your money is your paycheck every week is really an expense allowance because the team is providing you with a place to live. They're providing you with $40 a day in meal money and things like that. I know guys who've played minor league ball as late as 1990, So that's the last time I really had to think about this, but I can tell you that these guys in the minor leagues are there for the love of the game or because they think they're going to end up moving along and getting to the big show. And sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong. Look, I saw Manny Machado playing for the Baltimore Orioles AA farm team in on the eastern shore of Maryland for the Delmarva Shorebirds. And Machado was a great third baseman, arm like a rifle. And I don't think – I know that they had given him a huge signing bonus, but he was like 18. And people were saying, this guy's going to be with the Orioles sooner rather than later. And sure enough, a year and a half later, because we saw the game in August, a year later, the Orioles called him up in July of that season, and he proceeded to take over for an injured third baseman. He batted about 280, 290 for the rest of the for August and September, even though the Orioles were way out. And Buck Showalter liked to talk to him, talk about him as being the future of the Baltimore Orioles at third base, and for many years that's where he played.
Exactly. But one of the things that most of these kids that are coming into football are, what, 3-4 years older than, some 18-year-old. And I don't think that there's not the same education requirements either for baseball players. And, in fact, as I understand it, the football is getting more strict. I mean, I always laugh when you see, when they say where the players went to school, and there are always a few players that, they talk about their high school. And there's one, and I never forget who it is, who went to culinary school. It's an NFL in the NFL now, but still, baseball, it's not unusual for kids to come out at, start playing in the minors when they're 17, 18. In fact, that's pretty usual.
Well, that's like with hockey. There are junior leagues where people who are players, young guys who are players, are 16 and they're living away from home and they're playing semi-pro and they're living with a family. And
well, that includes my grandson.
That's how things work.
He's lived, he's now with a second team, but he lives with a family. And I don't think these kids get paid. Maybe they get paid a little something.
I'm sure they give them an allowance.
Well, I think they have to be very careful because most of them, unless they're really exceptional, plan on going from when they start right after high school. And in Canada, they start even earlier. But when they start right after high school, their next goal is to get into a college. And I think there's some... there's some things that are prohibited if you're then going to be an amateur playing in college.
I don't know the answer to that, Pat. I do know that there are people playing in some of the major junior leagues in Canada, particularly the one in Quebec, where they finish high school while they're in the league.
Right.
And then they're going to move to, let's say, a university like Dalhousie in Toronto or McGill in Montreal, and they're going to pursue a college education, and at the same time they're playing hockey.
And then hoping.
Very demanding.
And then
either
hoping.
Make it into the NHL to or go they into the make it into NHL. A profession.
No, they're really hoping to do that, or when they're in, at least the type of league that my grandson is in, I mean, they're hoping to be recruited by a good college. And what he tells me is that, there are scouts that come to those games, and, their goal is to get into, probably the best hockey school that they can get into. And interestingly, and I've said this before, he said that some of the most exceptional players just didn't have the high school academics. And so there's that combination where they're looking You know, more so than I think the football. You know, football, they'll recruit these kids out of high school, and yes, they have to get through college, but they're not truly looking at their high school grades when they recruit them. They're looking at their, you know, qualifications, mm-hmm. where because of the hockey's done a little differently, that they go from high school into junior hockey. Then the schools, you know, apparently not only look at their hockey ability, but also have to take into consideration, whether they're going to make it through college. And I guess that same is true to some extent with football. Although, you know, some of these powerhouse teams, like Alabama, you kind of wonder, how much they're placing, what emphasis they're placing on the kids' smarts. But getting back to recruiting now and in the NFL, I think a lot of coaches will say, one of the really important things that they're looking for is smarts and competitiveness and some of the other things they can teach. But obviously, especially some people like quarterbacks, I mean, they really do need to be bright. I mean, and they have to have an exceptional eye. That's the one thing that I notice where I see that Dave can look at a field, and maybe because he's played football, and he can spot things that I don't spot for maybe a few seconds later. I mean, he can pick up on all of that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the quarterback has to be able to know where everybody is on the field. I mean, when you think about it, the quarterback's vision has to be exceptional. And I don't mean just how well they see, but I'm just talking about their overall
peripheral vision and their understanding from what's going on in the periphery of their vision, how a play is developing. But that's important in just about any sport that involves movement, speed, and deception. You see that in hockey. The guy who was a genius at it was Wayne Gretzky, because mm-hmm. he could see the play develop before his coaches could, and he had amazing peripheral vision. It's also like Ted Williams, whose eyesight was so good that he could see the seams of a fastball rotating and know how it was going to break, which is why he was such a talented hitter. He was also an Army Air Force pilot. He fought in the Korean War in the air, and I think he may have also gotten involved towards the tail end of World War II as a pilot, as a very young man. He had exceptional eyesight. So you're absolutely right, Pat. Quarterbacks are not the kinds of people that you expect to walk around wearing Coke bottle glasses on the field.
But I'm talking more about rather not just 20/20 vision, but vision to see probably where people, just from looking at them, where they're planning on running. One of the things that we always talk about is those people who can intercept a ball, they're often reading the quarterback's eyes. One of the things that I think Rodgers has always been exceptional is you think he's going to throw one way, and all of a sudden he's throwing the opposite way. And I've watched him over and over and over, and I'm telling you, a big percentage of the time, I cannot tell where he's throwing that ball until he does it. And that's an exceptional gift that he kind of, what we used to say is, we used to have nuns in school who had eyes in the back of their head. In other words, you could be back there thinking she was turning to someone else and, boy, she nailed you every time because she had those eyes in the back of her head. But anyway, if I had to describe Rodgers, I would say there are times where he seems to have eyes in the back of his head.
Well,
he knows exactly where to go.
I agree with you about Rodgers. You know, I saw Rodgers play against the Jets about 5 years ago. And we were sitting in one of the corners of the end zone. And it was a strange game. Nobody scored a touchdown. But and I think it was Rodgers' first year before he played. He had just replaced Brett Favre, and Favre, I think, had either Favre had gone, or maybe Favre was sitting because he was injured. I don't remember what happened to Brett Favre. But it was very interesting to watch the play selection. And then when it was a pass play, you could see Rodgers mentally checking off his receivers. And every time I thought he was going in one direction, he would go in another. And when the Jets would flush him out of the pocket, all bets were off. He had no idea where the ball was going. There were times where he'd throw a screen literally across the grain, or he'd do a little flip pass to somebody in the flat, maybe 8 yards ahead of him. And, well, the Jets weren't very good that year, but it was very interesting to watch how he didn't give away where the ball was going.
Exactly. And one of the things, and you know I've always complained that they got rid of Jordy Nelson, because you knew that if nothing else seemed to be working, he so often had Jordy down there, and Jordy was right ready to catch that ball. And
well, folks, it's 6 o'clock. We're just about out of time. So get up off that couch and stand in front of that TV and cheer.
Yep, and Bill will be back next week, and hopefully maybe John will be able to be here, because I am not going to be able to be here next week. And I'm disappointed because, of course, we'll then know who's going to be in the Super Bowl. And until they start playing over us, the other thing, and think about it, we will have still a lot of football to talk about next week, both because we'll know who's going to the Super Bowl. And sometimes after the Super Bowl, it's like, hey, it's over, it's done, everybody's getting on to the next year, the combine, the draft, and, you know, there's not a whole lot of talk about the Super Bowl.